Good morning. Good morning.
जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी, जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी, गोपीजना वल्लभ गिरिवर धारी, यशोदानंदन ब्रज जन रंजन, यमुना तीरावन चारे, यमुना तीरावन चारे, जय राधा माधव कुंज विहारी, जय गोपी जन वल्लभ गिरिवर धारी, यशोदानंदन ब्रज जन रंजन, यमुना तीरावन चारे, जय राधा माधव कुंज विहारी, जय ओम विष्णुपाद परमहंस परिव्राजकाचार्य अष्टोत्तर शत श्री श्रीमद इस डिवाइन ग्रेस एसी भक्ति वेदांत स्वामी श्रील प्रभुपाद की जय। अनंत कोटि वैष्णव वृंद की जय। ग्रंथ राज श्रीमद भागवतम की जय। ऑल ग्लोरीज टू द असेंबल डिवोटीज, ऑल ग्लोरीज टू द असेंबल डिवोटीज, ऑल ग्लोरीज टू श्री श्री गुरु एंड गौरांग। नारायण नमस्कृत्य नरम चैव नरोत्तमं देवीं सरस्वतीं व्यासं ततो जयमुदीरयेत्। नष्टप्रायेषु भद्रेषु नित्यं भागवत सेवया भगवती उत्तम श्लोके भक्तिर्भवति नैष्ठिकी। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय, ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय, ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। Antra Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 6, Chapter 12, Text 10. Text 9 does not have purport, so I'll read the translation. Our sensory prowess, mental power, bodily strength, living force, immortality, and mortality are all subject to the superintendence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Not knowing this, foolish people think the dull material body to be the cause of their activities. And text 10. Yathadarumayi nari यथा पत्रमयो मृगः एवं भूतानि मघवन् ईशातन्त्राणि विद्धि भोः यथा दारुमयी नारी यथा पत्रमयो मृगः एवं भूतानि मघवन् ईशतन्त्राणि विद्धि भो यथा दारुमयी नारी यथा पत्रमयो मृगः एवं भूतानि मघवन् ईशतन्त्राणि विद्धि भो यथा दारुमयी नारी यथा पत्रमयो मृगः एवं भूतानि भगवन् ईशतन्त्राणि विद्धि भो यथा जस्ट एज दारुमयी मेड ऑफ वुड नारी अ वुमन यथा जस्ट एज पत्रमयः मेड ऑफ लीव्स मृगः एन एनिमल एवं दस भूतानि ऑल थिंग्स मघवन ओ किंग इंद्र ईश द सुप्रीम पर्सनालिटी ऑफ गॉडहेड तंत्राणि डिपेंडिंग अपॉन विद्धि प्लीज नो भो ओ सर ट्रांसलेशन एंड प्रपोर्ट बाय श्रील प्रभुपाद की जाय ओ किंग इंद्र एज अ वुडन डॉल दैट लुक्स लाइक अ वुमन और एज एन एनिमल मेड ऑफ ग्रास एंड लीव्स कैन नॉट मूव और डांस इंडिपेंडेंटली बट डिपेंड्स फुल्ली ऑन द पर्सन हु हैंडल्स इट ऑल ऑफ अस डांस अकॉर्डिंग टू द डिजायर ऑफ द सुप्रीम कंट्रोलर The personality of Godhead. No one is independent. Purport. This is confirmed in Chaitanya Charitamrita Adi Leela, Chapter 5, Text 142. Ekale Ishwara Krishna Ara Sabha Bhritya Yare Aiche Nachaya Satahe Kare Nritya. Lord Krishna alone is the supreme controller, and all others are his servants. They dance as he makes them do so. We are all servants of Krishna. We have no independence. We are dancing according to the desire of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but out of ignorance and illusion, we think we are independent of the Supreme Will. Therefore, it is said, Ishvara Parama Krishna Satchidananda Vigraha Anadir Adir Govinda Sarvakarana Karanam. Krishna, who is known as Govinda, is the supreme controller. He has an eternal, blissful and spiritual body. He is the origin of all. He has no other origin, for he is the prime cause of all causes. Brahma Samhita 5.1. There are a few verses that are part of a section, so I'm going to read further. Text 11. पुरुष प्रकृतिर्व्यक्तम आत्मभूतेन्द्रियाशयः शक्नुवन्ति अस्य सर्गादौ न विना यदनुग्रहात्। The three Vishnus, Karodakshayi Vishnu, Garbhodakshayi Vishnu, and Kshirodakshayi Vishnu, the material nature, the total material energy, the false ego, the five elements, the material senses, the mind, the intelligence, and consciousness cannot create the material manifestation without the direction of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Purport. And it's confirmed in the Vishnu Purana, Parasya Brahmanah Shakti Statedam Akhilam Jagat. Whatever manifestations we experience are nothing but various energies of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. These energies cannot create anything independently. This is also confirmed by the Lord Himself in Bhagavad Gita, chapter 9, text 10, Maya Dakshena Prakriti Suyate Sacharacharam. This material nature is working under my direction, O son of Kunti, and it is producing all moving and non-moving beings. Only under the direction of the Lord, the Supreme Person, can Prakriti, which is manifested in 24 elements, create different situations for the living entity. In the Vedas, the Lord says, Madiyam Mahimanam Cha Parabrahmeti Shabditam Vetsyasi Anugrihitam Me Samprashnair Vivrutam Hridi. Since everything is a manifestation of my energy, I am known as Parabrahman. Therefore, everyone should hear from me about my glorious activities. The Lord also says in Bhagavad Gita, chapter 10, text 2, Aham Adirhi Devanam, I am the origin of all the demigods. Therefore, the Supreme Personality of Godhead is the origin of everything, and no one is independent of Him. Srila Madhvacharya also says, Anisha Jiva Rupena, the living entity is Anisha, never the controller, but is always controlled. Therefore, when a living entity becomes proud of being an independent Ishvara or God, that is his foolishness. Such foolishness is described in the following verse. Avidvanevam atmanam manyate anisham ishvaram bhutai srijati bhutani grasate tani tai svayam. A foolish, senseless person cannot understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Although always dependent, he falsely thinks himself the Supreme. If one thinks, according to one's previous fruit of actions, one's material body is created by the father and mother, and the same body is annihilated by another agent, as another animal is devoured by a tiger, this is not proper understanding. The Supreme Personality of Godhead Himself creates and devours the living beings through other living beings. Purport. According to the conclusion of the philosophy known as Karma Mimamsa, one's karma or previous fruit of activity is the cause of everything, and therefore there is no need to work. Cool. Those who arrive at this conclusion are foolish. When a father creates a child, he does not do so independently. He is induced to do so by the Supreme Lord. As the Lord Himself says in Bhagavad Gita, chapter 15, text 15, Sarvasya chaham hridi sannivishta matta smritir jnanam apohanam cha. We are in text 12, Jagadanda Prabhu. Text 12. I am in everyone's heart, and from me comes remembrance, knowledge, and forgetfulness. Unless one receives dictation from the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who sits within everyone's heart, one cannot be induced to create anything. Therefore, the father and mother are not the creators of the living entity. According to the living entity's karma, fruit of activities, he is put into the semen of the father, who injects the living entity into the womb of the mother. Then, according to the body of the mother and father, yatha yoni, yatha bijam, the living entity accepts a body and takes birth to suffer or enjoy, mostly suffer. Therefore, the Supreme Lord is the original cause of one's birth. Similarly, the Supreme Lord is the cause of one's being killed. No one is independent. Everyone is dependent. The true conclusion is that the only independent person is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So what's the theme? What's the one sentence that's been repeated again and again and again? We're not independent. And only Krishna is fully independent. And the and the degree of independence that Krishna has is unfathomable. He is called Swarat. So we're going to go back and speak mostly from the first verse of the Srimad Bhagavatam. First canto, first chapter, very first verse. That summarizes everything we've been reading. Anything or anyone who takes birth is dependent on the source for being born. So we are all born from, unless we are Lord Brahma, we are all born from mother and father. And it doesn't matter what species we might be in. And so we are dependent on the parents to get this body or to have life within this material world, to exist. And our parents need their parents to have been born, or needed to have been born. However, the Supreme, in fact, if you go back all the way to Lord Brahma, even he is dependent on the Supreme Personality of Godhead to be able to manifest in this world. Yet Krishna, who is the source, has no source himself. That's the verse, Adi Purusham, and also that Ishvara Parama Krishna Satchidananda Vigraha Anadir Adir Govinda Sarva Karana Karanam. Anadir means one who does not have a source, one who is beginningless. Yet Adir, he is the source of everything. And Sarva Karana Karanam. So we'll come to the Karana Karanam part later. The first source. So Srimad Bhagavatam begins with Janma Adhyasya Yataha. Janma Adi. Adi usually means etc. Or in addition to. So here also we hear Adir. Anadir, Adir. And Janma Adi. Janma etc. means everything is born from Krishna. Krishna maintains everything. And annihilation. Krishna is the cause of annihilation of everything. And he himself is completely independent without being affected by any of these changes. We are affected by changes. Correct? Weather is changing. We are affected by it. The Sunday feast timing very likely is changing and we are affected by that. Sunday night, a few people gathered around me to express why they think the timing should not change. And I said, okay, I'm collecting feedback. Can you please tell me what your reasons are? I'd like to know. No reason. We just don't think it should change. Okay, for what? What is driving you to say no? They didn't have a good enough answer, except most Indian people want to shop at Devon and then they come at the end of the day. And I said, but that's not a good enough reason. So they told me, but what is your reason? And I gave them about five reasons. And I said, all five have to do with the preaching mission. We want our neighbors to come, persons in Rogers Park who don't come to our Sunday feast program. It's because we don't even reach them. So we want to make a conscious effort to reach out to them. And in general in America, Sunday nights are not for going out. So we want to see if an afternoon will work. And we want to try. And I said to them, you know, this is not like some government policy that if it doesn't work, we will be in an irreversible position where we cannot change things. We can always try. If it doesn't work, we change back. What's the big thing? We're trying something. And after back and forth for about 40 minutes, then they said, you know, one of the things we learned in our management school is the moment an organization proposes change, the first response is resistance, because people in general are resistant to change. So we're doing the same thing with you. Actually, we should be supporting you. So you have our support. Let's see. I said, yeah, that's good. Let's see. We're learning something. I asked them, you know, for your objection, what's the, when I was asking them, what's your motivation or reason behind? Because they didn't have one. I said, for me, I've been breathing for many, many hours a day, the air of Rogers Park. I'm living here. I see things. I sense certain things. So, you know, give me the little room for trying something. For example, you know, we moved Rath Yatra from a very expensive devotee picnic on Devon Avenue because no one else was coming. It was nice. It was very expensive for the same almost like a Sunday feast meal. But the way we moved it here to the park, things have changed dramatically. So many people, this Rath Yatra, almost 5,000 people crossed through our festival. So there is something which we otherwise wouldn't have never tapped into. So we want to try something. Okay, yes, we understand. So like that, we're always dependent. We're dependent on something to do. However, Krishna is not dependent on anything or anyone. This is an important thing to be very clear about for us. Krishna is not dependent on us for anything. Because anything that is going on in this world, including in our lives, is anyway ordained and controlled by Him. We get an opportunity. It is His kindness that He includes us in something as part of service and gives us the pleasure and honor and recognition, etc. But actually, it is He who's doing it. It is His energies that are manifesting anything in this world. Whatever we do, speaking, for example, it's Krishna's energy. The capacity to speak, and that sound has to travel through air, is Krishna's energy. Sound exists even in ether. It's all Krishna's energy. The mind, the faculty of thought process, intelligence, they're all Krishna's energies. And we are given these assets to utilize them in service to Krishna. Just this morning, I was hearing Prabhupada speak on this topic. He said, well, when you have to construct a big building, you need earth, you need steel, you need water, electricity, etc. And these are all Krishna's energies. Can you create earth? No. Can you create water? No. Even if we know that hydrogen and oxygen combined to become water, we cannot create hydrogen. We cannot create oxygen. These are Krishna's energies. All we do is we somehow figure out how to put them together, and even in that figuring out, that intelligence is Krishna's. What are we doing? The endeavor is also Krishna's. We exist. The foolishness is, the next verse, thinking, I am the doer. I'm doing something. So the first verse says, Janma Dhyasya Yataha Itaratashcharteshu Abhigya. That he is conscious of everything in every atom of creation. He is conscious of what's going on. Directly or indirectly, he knows. And Swarat is fully independent. He absolutely does not depend on anything or anyone for what he needs to get done. I mean, that's fantastic. If Mayavadis say we are also God, no, how can? We have absolutely no independence. In fact, you know, sometimes we say we don't have the independence to even say, today I will not go to the bathroom. We can't try that. We might be able to resist for an hour, maybe 2 hours. But after that, cannot. One is forced. Because the nature works in a particular way. We have to depend on nature. The food we eat, the activities we do, they're all happening because of Krishna's nature or energies. Abhigya Swarat. And Tene Brahma Hridaya Adikavaye. And all of this knowledge about his superintendence, his independence, his being the source of everything, that knowledge was induced in the heart of Lord Brahma. He's called Adikavi. And it says, Tejo Vari Mridam Yatha Vinimaya. Teja means fire, Vari, water, Mrid means earth. And he says, Vinimaya. Vinimaya means configured in a bewildering sort of way. And Prabhupada is explaining that everything that we see is fire, water, and earth combinations. Our body, my body, your body, her body, this building, this desk, the mic, the board, whatever it is, it's a combination of these three. However, in such a bewildering way that we see them very distinct and independent. That is the vinimaya, that's the bewilderment. That, wow, that body is so different than I am. This is so different. So this, the constituent elements are the same, earth, water, and fire. Tejo vari midam yatha, but vinimaya. And it's bewildering to such an extent that it's not just the innocent human being, but even the great demigods, muhyanti yat surayah, even the great demigods can get a little bewildered by it. How these three elements combine, or three categories of elements combine by the modes of nature, that even the great demigods cannot assess, cannot figure it out. So Prabhupada simplified the whole thing for us. God is very great, I am very tiny, therefore I should serve God. He said this is bhakti. And this is absolute truth. But Tejavari Mridam is such combinations that we start thinking them as distinct and different, and we want to exploit them. Like a building looks different than a mountain, which looks different from a cave, but they're all the same thing. Thavinimayo. And then he says, Muhyanti yat suryah. Sura, as we heard yesterday, Sura means the demigods. They're very knowledgeable. They have great powers. Yet, they don't have powers greater than Krishna's power. In fact, their powers are also derived from Krishna, as described in the 7th chapter of Bhagavad Gita. Krishna says, whatever power they have comes from me, because I am the source. Similarly, whatever power, ability we may have, each one of us has some abilities. That ability also comes from Krishna. He is the source of it, source of all of them. And then he says, what to speak of the ordinary living entities? Even the three Vishnus, the Purusha avatars, who are engaged in creation of this whole material manifestation, even they are dependent on Krishna to empower them. The very fact that Mahavishnu can glance at the material energy and agitate her and impregnate her with all the living entities. Garbhadakshaya Vishnu can provide all the material ingredients for creation of this universe and sustain that universe. And Kshiradakshaya Vishnu can enter every atom so that his energies can manifest at the atomic level. All of their powers are also coming from Krishna. And the opposite is also true, but every living entity is called Anishwara. Anishwara means not the controller. The illusion is we are empowered to control a few things and we think we are the supreme controllers. We can control a few things, correct? We can control our hunger for some time. We can control the urge to go to the bathroom for some time. We can control our breathing for some time. We can control some other persons for some time. Of one person, a few persons, maybe a nation, but for some time. But one is not an independent controller eternally. But one thinks like that. Hiranyakashipu thought like that. Ravana thought like that. Hiranyaksha thought like that. And in the modern context, we may not think such grand scale because we don't have the capacity. But we think at whatever scale, we are independent controllers. The tendency to exert our ownership on others is very, very high. Everything is symptomatic of the core problem. The core problem is we don't recognize Krishna's ownership or proprietorship, and we think we are also owners and proprietors. So we exert that ownership on others. We try to. And that creates issues and problems because others are also thinking like that. The example that we've heard many times is if you throw a pebble in water, it creates some ripples. And someone else throws another pebble a little distant away, that one also creates ripples. And someone else throws another pebble somewhere, that creates ripples. And after some time, all these ripples, they clash. Because the center or the source of those ripples or sources are distinct. And so somewhere the clash will come. But if all pebbles are grouped and thrown in one place only, then there are no clashes. All the ripples are harmonious. So each one of us thinks I'm the controller, then my controllership will clash with someone else's controllership. However, for the organization of the universe, Krishna empowers certain persons as controllers, no doubt. Great Indra, he can control rainfall in the entire universe. Or Suryadev, he can control distribution of light and heat throughout the universe. Lord Brahma, You can control how everyone's body is constructed, etc. Yet, none of them think, and if they do, then it is adjusted accordingly, that they are independent. Coming up tomorrow, there's this whole idea for which the month is celebrated, is about thinking of oneself as a controller. What happens, especially when Govardhan Puja is coming up? Lord Indra, he thought himself as the supreme controller to such a degree that he went to finish and kill and massacre the entire land of Vrindavan, which is Krishna's land, and the Vrajavasis, who are Krishna's personal associates. It's not like he got angry and he went and kicked another mountain or a devastated the moon planet. But he went after Krishna's place. And Krishna humbled him. Or in the case of Mother Yashoda, although she was not proud or thinking of herself as a controller, the fact that she wanted to bind Krishna, thinking that she can, was the frustration in her that manifested, because she couldn't. How much ever she tried, she could not bind Krishna. What allowed her to bind Krishna was that, one, Krishna allowed himself to do so, and second, he was overpowered by her love for him. That's different. But when we think we are controllers, it's a struggle, because it's the only outcome of such controllership is severe frustration. Severe frustration and disappointment, anger, fear, defeatist attitude, because we are not the controllers. Vita raga bhaya krodha. The raga is where we are attached to the conception we might be controllers. Or bhaya, there is fear when we are not going to be able to control something. And anger or frustration, because we don't have the ability. Only Krishna is the controller. Then Prabhupada touches, or Vritrasura is touching this idea, if a person thinks, here's the quote, if one thinks, according to one's previous fruit of actions, one's material body is created by the father and mother, and the same body is annihilated by another agent, as another animal is devoured by a tiger, this is not proper understanding. The Prabhupada addresses, this is called karma mimamsa philosophy. It's one of the six very popular doctrines which Jiva Goswami was a thorough expert on. He had learnt it so that he can defeat them. He became an expert at all of these. So when the right time would come, he would be able to defeat everything on the basis of these six doctrines to establish Srimad Bhagavatam as the superlative scripture. Karma Mimamsa is very simple to understand. All it says is that the superior most controlling factor is the laws of karma. Everything happens according to the laws of karma only and nothing else. The laws of karma by themselves are not dependent on Krishna. They are the laws of nature. They are the supreme laws that control everything within the universe. So actually, there is no one to blame. There is no controller per se. Everything that is manifesting in one's life is from karma. It goes to the extent of saying that the karmic laws don't need a superintendent. When Prabhupada says that in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna describes that everything is happening under his supervision. This is similar to certain philosophies where they speak that material energy is independent and on its own. Like most material scientists, for them they recognize the supremacy of the laws of material nature. They will not accept that there is a person, a supreme person, governing the laws of material nature. So Prabhupada used to give this very simple but profound analogy. He said, if you see a woman walking on the street and she's pregnant, a pregnant woman on the street, she may not have her husband walking alongside. She may be walking alone. Only a fool will say that there was no man in her life. Even if you cannot see the man, even if let's say he doesn't exist around, he's in a different city altogether, still it's foolish to come to the conclusion that there was no man involved. Because she is pregnant. She cannot become pregnant on her own. Even if someone says she was artificially inseminated, even then there's a presence of man somewhere. You can't create semina. So similarly, material energy, she's constantly creating so many phenomena. Yet there is the presence of the Supreme Person who may not be visible, whose presence may not be seen and understood or appreciated at every moment. But without the Supreme Person, material nature, energy cannot create. Therefore, Prabhupada's giving that example that a person may wrongly think that my father and mother got together, therefore I was born, they are my source. I hear Prabhupada writing, father and mother are not the creators of the living entity. They are the ones who allow for the living entity to have a body. And that the father and mother, even the feeling, the inducing of the tendency to procreate is coming from Krishna. So practically, how do we live our lives with this understanding? That we try only to be instruments of Krishna's will. And it's important to understand what is Krishna's will and how to live according to that. So in the Bhagavad Gita, near the end of the chapter, when Krishna describes to Arjuna that after you've shown him the universal form, he says, all these kings, everyone on the battlefield is already dead. They will die because I've already ordained for it to happen. Whether you fight this battle or not, they're all going to die. But you can be an instrument and become glorious. Nimitta matra bhava savyasachin. He says, nimitta matra, learn to be the instrument. So just as we are learning to be the instruments, others are also instruments. Krishna is using everyone as an instrument, either for our karmic reactions or for the manifestation of his divine will. Regardless, everyone is an instrument. And the perfection of the living entity is to find resonance and harmony in that instrumentality. And that's the practice of Bhakti Yoga, to move according to Krishna's will. Our difficulty is, and I'll end with this, that we are anyway moving according to Krishna's will. Right? The modes of nature are pushing us. Right? When ignorance captures us, it's not like we decide to fall asleep. It's beyond our control. We fall asleep anyway. Or we don't decide to wake up. It doesn't work like that. In fact, no one decides to wake up. It's the mental energy or some other controller who wakes us up. So we are anyway moved by Krishna's energy or will, for that matter. There's no doubt about it. Whether we willingly align ourselves with that will or not is the question of the hour. When we fight that or resist that, then the material energy works in such a way that it forces us. That friction is called suffering. Because we exert our, what we say, individual controllership or the sense of it upon Krishna's will. And there is a mismatch there. But if we willingly acquiesce, at least to begin with, and then there later lovingly participate in Krishna's will, then even if the modes of nature, however, the things seem to work against us, still one doesn't experience suffering because one is aligned with Krishna's will. I'll end with this example that Prahlad Maharaj gives in the 7th canto. He makes a distinction between a tiny fish and a massive elephant. He says, suppose an elephant is trying to cross a river that has a strong current. Now, elephant is a very massive, gigantic animal. But even if the elephant enters the river with strong current, the elephant will be washed away. Correct? However, a tiny fish, which is very small and doesn't have much strength, doesn't get washed away. Why? He says, because the fish is taking shelter of the river. He doesn't clash or crash into the stones and die. Nothing, he just swims along. Because the tiny fish has taken shelter of the river, whereas the mighty elephant is fighting the current. So, instrumentality is to take shelter of Krishna's will, Krishna's instructions, so one can navigate through the material energy without being washed away. Now, one may not falsely think that the guiding principle of life is go with the flow. That's not our philosophy. Go with the flow. Anything happens, go with the flow. Our philosophy is anything happens, go with Krishna's will. Understanding what might be Krishna's will here and go with that. And that's important to understand. What is Krishna's will? What is my duty within that will of Krishna? For example, let's say someone comes and let's say brings a big bucket of water and just pours it into the lobby, for lack of an example, because they're, let's say, upset with the Hare Krishnas in the neighborhood, and they come and pour water in the lobby. We don't say, go with the will. That's how it is. Water's there, so what? Cool. Go with the will. No. What would Krishna like us to do? What would be our response? That's important to understand. We may say, oh, Krishna's bringing our attention to the need for mopping the lobby. Or Krishna may be indicating certain things to us. Each person may get a different sense of it. We can take guidance from whoever we look up to get a sense of what our role or our participation in that will might be. And then move accordingly. So anyway, I'll pause here. Any comments, questions? Tense. Anyone else says after Terence? Krishna Nam, Mother Maria. Terence first.
Hare Krishna.
Cool.
Yesterday, Ladini Shakti had brought up a point.
Get the mic closer to your mouth.
She was asking a question regarding, like, how can you see Krishna's hand in certain circumstances when it doesn't seem like, you know, he's there at the moment. And to add on, you had said, acting in Krishna's will, that he's working behind every situation. My question is, for instance, maybe a particular thing or maybe person that attracts you to becoming more Krishna conscious, or even endeavoring on where your personal relationship is. How do you see Krishna working in that situation, and how do you react or respond accordingly to whatever type of realizations you may get or that happen from that experience?
Well, let me make sure I understand. The question is, if there's a particular thing or relationship that inspires me to become more Krishna conscious, how do I see Krishna's will in that? How do you act according to that?
Because you said we're not the doers. We're not Ishvara. Yeah. We're not in control of that situation. So if it's Krishna's will, whatever needs to be revealed will happen in course. But how do you go according to that situation to sort of let Krishna act?
Well, if someone is acting as an instrument of Krishna, our response to that instrument is gratitude, inquiry and service. Because especially some persons are empowered to do so because they understand Krishna's will far better. Now there are also other wills of instruments that are, I would say, not so conscious. They just happen to be an instrument of Krishna without their knowing to be so, or their role being so. Still, we're very grateful. Our gratitude is to the instrument and to the source, always. And that gratitude can manifest in different ways, depending upon the intensity of our realization and the intensity of their instrumentality. Therefore, Chanakya Pandit said, you can take an instruction from even a chandala. But we don't go and submit ourselves to a chandala for the rest of our life, finding out how to become Krishna conscious, unless he is fully Krishna conscious. You understand? Suppose we're having a nasty day and someone on the street says, oh, come on, chill out a little bit. We don't fall at their feet and say, please accept me as your disciple, because somehow you've given me this divine truth. We thank them. Oh, Krishna is reminding me through someone, etc. Depends who the person is. It doesn't matter. Even if it is peer level, Krishna gives instructions through peers because sometimes they're easier to accept. They also foster friendships, which is very important. Part of the instrument, part of Krishna's will might be to see friendships. So we become friends. We thank them and we become friends. And we pray to Krishna to be instruments of his mercy in their lives or someone else's life. Please give me that chance if you so desire. Then it is called paraspara, mutual. We assist each other. And back to the point Ladini Shakti was asking yesterday about situations where we don't see the hand of Krishna because it seems like he's not there in the moment.
It is usually the other way, that Krishna is always there. We are not in the moment, so we don't see it.
Mm-hmm.
He's always there. He's ever present.
Thank you.
Okay. Mother Maria.
As you were explaining how Jiva incorrectly tries to exert a sense of controllership, you brought up the story of Yashoda trying to bind Krishna. So I was just wondering if those spiritual entities that come down with Krishna, if they have these tendencies as well to have controllership.
No.
Okay.
They do not. The reason I expressed Mother Yashoda's reference was not because she thinks she's an independent controller, but it was in the context of she was trying to bind Krishna, and Krishna would not allow it, because as long as he does not allow it, it won't happen. That was the point, not that she thinks she's a controller. Although she thinks, and there are many references where the residents of Vrindavan say to Nanda Maharaj, "Your son, he has killed this demon. You know, this very, very big demon." Nanda Maharaj says, "I don't care, but it's my duty to discipline him. He's my son." They're not thinking like controllers. It's facilitating loving exchanges. Mother Yashoda is also in that, where there's facilitation of a loving exchange. So it was only in the reference of, unless Krishna allows, it won't happen. That's all. Not that Mother Yashoda thinks like that.
Thank you.
Krishna Nam.
Hare Krishna Prabhu. Thank you for a nice lecture. First, before the question, can you just clarify what was these three categories of elements you were speaking in the beginning?
Three categories of?
Of elements.
Of elements. Well, the first verse of Bhagavatam says, Tejah Vari Mrid. Tejah means fire. Vari means water. And Mrid means land. So, 2 days ago, when I was referring to it, I was talking of a mirage. You know, when there is, in a desert, you see a mirage. It seems to appear that at a distance there is some water. And one keeps walking and never meets water, because all it is the heat of the sand or the sun that vaporizes the moisture in the air and makes it look as if there is water.
No, I asked the question because there are five gross and three subtle elements.
That is correct. We say there are five gross and three subtle elements. So this is not in conflict of that. It just says that everything is a combination of fire, water and earth. Because there is air and space and all that too. But the verse particularly says, Teja Vahari Mridam.
Okay. My question is...
It means the combination of material elements. That's the point he's making.
Okay. So in Bhagavad Gita, in verse in chapter 3, verse 29, Prakriti Kriyamanani, it said that we are fully dependent on the material nature and the three gunas. And as far as I know, we are, our only independence is to desire. We cannot do anything. You cannot move our bodies and everything. We just can desire, and everything else is made by material nature and Krishna. Can you say something about this?
That well, just a slight edit to your question. It's 3:27.
Oh yeah.
Chapter 3:27. And it's not that we only have desire, because even our desires in that sense are controlled by previous karmas, or they're called vasana, purva janma vasana. That what we desire in this life is highly influenced from our karmas, from our previous activities. So in our previous activities, if we, the karmically, we cannot have a sweet tooth, we don't desire any sweets. Or we don't desire these kinds of foods, we don't desire these kinds of activities. So what is ours is not so much desire, it is what's called free will, the choice to act in a particular way. That is ours, in a small way. That choice to act is also curbed by or limited by the body we are in. For example, a tree. A soul in a tree has choice but cannot exert it. So it doesn't seem like they're exerting their free will. Or the soul in an animal's body has the tendency for choice but cannot exert it in that body. It's fully manifest in the human life, or better manifest in the human life. And the ability to choose is described by the kind of body. The parallel is, if you tie a cow to a peg or a tree by a rope, to the degree or the according to the length of the rope, the cow has freedom. So beyond the length of the rope, the cow has no freedom. And within the length of the rope, the cow has unlimited freedom. It's limited, per se, but it can freely move within the length of the leash. After that, it cannot. So depending on our karmic activities, that leash is shortened or lengthened or completely removed.
Can we conclude, Prabhu, that the only independence the living entities have is this independence of free will? As, for example, in the spiritual world, when the living entity can choose between going in the material world and remain in the spiritual world?
Right. We could say that. Generally, a living entity doesn't choose to go to the living material world. It chooses to compete with Krishna. The consequences of the material world per se, although it gets into this awkward conversation about cause and effect in the spiritual world, etc. But Prabhupada roughly explains it this way. That is the choice. Raga dvesha vimuktaistu. Dvesha means envy, by which we turn our face away from Krishna, from a mood of service to a mood of competitiveness. And that's what causes dvandava moha, being illusioned by duality. Okay. Yes, Mother Maria.
Just wondering, the seed desires, what is the source of these unmanifest desires?
What is the source of these unmanifest desires? Aprarabdha karma, previous lives activities that are sitting in form of tendency, kutam. Those are the tendencies. The tendencies manifest according to time and circumstances. For a Prabhupada gives the example that a person has, let's say, a tendency to smoke cigarette. And suppose he has given up smoking. If he walks on a street where he sees a billboard, or there is a person smoking, or someone gives him a cigarette, because the tendency is sitting somewhere, he will go for it. So those desires are sitting way in the light of the conversations that we've been having for the past few days. We say it's been sitting in the subconscious, way down somewhere deep. And depending on what circumstance, something that manifests, whoop, will come out. Or for that matter, within every living entity, sex desire is there. And when the body becomes ready for it, that tendency is manifest. Until then, it's not manifest. like in babies and infants. Sex desire is there, it just cannot manifest. And when that body grows and matures into puberty, things look very different. Or when it comes, or a person becomes a very old man or a woman, they cannot use their body in such activity, but the desire is still sitting. Okay, thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Leela Manjari, we covered till 12. Tomorrow is 13. Yes, our Tuesday meet.
I thought I might not be able to join.